A local two-day summit on child abuse that starts today in Rochester will bring together social workers and professionals from medicine, education, and law enforcement for training seminars. The keynote speaker is Marilyn Vanderburr. She's a former Miss America, and she is a survivor of incest. Marilyn was only 5 years old when her father began sexually abusing her. It continued until she left for college. Marilyn delivers speeches about this around the country each year, she says, so the people will not learn more about her, but about themselves. Marilyn Vanderburr is joining us this morning. Marilyn, thank you so much for taking the time to be here.
Thank you for inviting me.
Your story is a painful, although ultimately courageous one, but it's the sort of story that most people, I imagine, would consider very private, something to protect. Why and how did you make the decision to go public with it?
I didn't make the decision. I would never have gone public with it. Shame is our biggest issue, and I believed if anyone knew about what I endured, no college would accept my daughter, no boy's parents would want him to marry into my family. We just feel unacceptable, shamed, but a newspaper reporter learned I was an incest survivor when I was 53. And the next day, it was on the front page of the Denver Post, and it stayed on the front pages of our Denver papers for 6 days.
And did all those awful things that you had predicted happen?
It did not. I had the papers called me a woman of courage. It was just difficult to believe that they were calling me a woman of courage instead of the shame that I had anticipated. I had one columnist who knew my father well and who was pretty rough on me, but all the other reporters. What happened was on the third day, my husband and I were running around the track just trying to get away from everything, and my sister had come forward that morning. And a woman stopped me on the track, and she said, "We're so proud of what you're doing, and I'm so grateful your sister came forward this morning." And I was not happy about that. I wanted it to end. And I said, "Really, why?" And she said, "Because yesterday, on our most popular radio talk show, people were calling in and saying, why should we believe her? Now that your sister has come forward, they will have to believe you." I was so stunned. I looked at her and I said, if people are not going to believe 53-year-old me, then who is going to believe a child? And that was the moment that changed my life. I went home, I called the newspapers, I called the television stations, and I said, let's get to work, and it's what I do every day, all day, and well until the day I die.
You write in your book, Miss America by Day, about a moment when you realized your mother knew about your abuse but was not going to do anything to help you. Can you describe that scene for our listeners?
Yes, I was older than 10 because we were living in our new house. My father always came into my room fairly late, 10:30 or 11 o'clock at night. And one night he was in my room and we heard my mother. So the second she started down the three steps that would lead to my door, we heard her because she dressed beautifully for bed and she wore, they're called mules, and they have a hard heel. So the second she stepped on that first linoleum step, we heard her, and everything stopped. And then we heard her very slowly come down the second step. She just had one more step to go, and then about eight more steps to my door, and everything froze. And we all knew, I believe, what everybody was thinking. And I just held my breath, and we heard her take another step, but she was going the other way. She was going back to her room, and I knew that night that she would never walk through that door.
Did you ever confront your father as an adult about what he did to you?
I did confront my father. I was 40 years old. My life shut down. My life began shutting down when my daughter turned 5. I couldn't figure out what was going on, and it took me a long time to understand that her age began triggering all the memories and the feelings that I had buried so well. And when she turned 5, I began having serious problems. And I knew I had to face all of it, and I knew I had to confront my father. When he knew why I was coming, I said, this is the most difficult thing I'd ever done. He said, I'll be back in a minute. We were talking in the breakfast room where I had grown up. He went up the staircase. I heard him go up the staircase two by two, and when he came back immediately, there was no question in my mind that he had a gun. I absolutely knew he had a gun, and he did, in his pocket. And after our conversation, and he didn't deny anything. He would have if anyone had gone with me, but by myself, he did not deny anything. After our conversation, I started to leave, and he pulled out the gun. And he put it in the palm of his hand, and he held it out to me, and he said, if you had come in any other way, I would have killed myself. And the message he was giving me was, if you are even thinking about exposing me, take a good look at the consequences. Incest homes are violent homes, and yet, if you look at the pictures of my family, there are four lovely, attractive girls, my father and mother, handsome, beautiful, very wealthy. His obituary was on the front page of our paper. That's how important he was in Denver. You would never, ever have imagined that that could be going on in our home, and it's one of the many reasons why I continue to speak. But the other reason I continue to speak is that when my life shut down, and most of us have to face our childhoods in our late 30s or early 40s, I couldn't find a woman who had come through it. I needed to talk to somebody who had gone back and faced the memories, who had confronted everybody in her family who had come through it, and I couldn't find anyone. And I kept saying to my husband, I need to talk to somebody. And finally he said, role model for yourself. And now I have people email me. I've had someone email me from Rochester, and she said, I need to see you and touch you and know that you're real. And what she's saying is, I need to look you right in your eyes, and I need to know that you truly did find peace. And she will stay after I speak, and she will come up to me, and she will see that I have found peace. It is possible to survive horrific childhood trauma, and for a marriage to survive horrific childhood trauma, and for a daughter to grow up and go to law school and be outstanding and what we would call normal. Every time I say normal, my husband laughs. I'm not sure what normal is, but we have a lovely, talented, successful daughter. It's possible to come through this.
Did you understand at the tender age of 5, when your father began abusing you, Marilyn, that what he was doing was wrong? Does a 5-year-old understand that?
Our minds are wondrous places, and I was able to split my mind. It's called dissociation. I was able to repress all of those memories and feelings. And how could I get up and go to school and get A's and be on the ski team and be in the choir and be May Queen? How could I get up and do that for 13 years if I knew what awaited me at night? A child's mind just can't accommodate that. And one of the ways we survive that is by shutting off the memories. It's as if it's happening to, a different part of you, and that's true, and you bury all of that. And what happens then in recovery is all those memories and feelings come up. I don't remember the first time he came in. I remember reading an article one day on an airplane, and it said people were discussing the first time they had had a sexual encounter. And I remember thinking, I don't remember. And some other people were talking about the first kiss that you had, and thinking back and who the boy was, and I don't remember the first time. It just all sort of melds together in one nightmare, which I have been able to put behind me. It's over. I'm a flat lie. If you talk about my mother, it was harder for me. My mother or my father, I'm okay with that. It's over. I'm now leading just a life filled with joy and pride. I'm so proud of who I am, and it's hard for me to understand how shamed I was for 53 years. And another reason I continue to travel is because so many people say, just get over it. It happened 30 years ago. Why are you talking about this now? Because most of us are between the ages of 35 and 50 when all those memories and feelings come up, and we have to turn back and heal the child that we were.
Is that ultimately your message to survivors of sexual abuse, that there can be peace, there can be life after this?
Absolutely. But my other message is, and I think this is the most stunning sentence in the book, 14-year-olds comprise the largest number of sex offenders of any age group. 14-year-olds. I've been traveling now for 25 years. I've been in hundreds of cities. I've answered tens of thousands of emails. I have a website, so anybody can email me, and I answer from 50 to 100 every day. And this one sentence is actually what caused me to finally write a book. I haven't heard this sentence hundreds of times. I have heard or read this thousands of times. When I was 8 and my brother was 14. When I was 7 and my brother was 13. And girls do violate, but more often, teenage boys are inappropriately sexually touching younger or less powerful children. And they don't know what they're doing is wrong. They're 13. They're 14. They have normal, natural sexual feelings, and there's nothing wrong with that. But it is very wrong to touch a younger or less powerful child, but they don't know that. I say every time I stand up to parents, talk to your children as they grow into their sexuality. Talk about what is appropriate and what is not appropriate as they go into their teen years.
Marilyn Vanderburgh, keynote speaker at today's Bavona Summit on Child Abuse in Rochester. Marilyn, thank you so much for sharing your story with us.
Thank you so much, and talk to your children.